So we left it, Christmas of 1946. Bo came back from Europe. All your other sisters had gone up to the Bay Area. And Bo was trying to convince your dad to have you go up and join them. Permanently.
One less mouth to feed.
One less mouth to feed. So how'd that go?
Well, it was the way up. Aboard a Greyhound bus, had a little accident because I was told later there was a car parked half off the road and half on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, guess the bus driver couldn't avoid it, crashed into it. The bus flipped and turned, and the top part of the bus slammed into a telephone pole, I guess.
Okay, wait a minute. I want to be clear on this. You're in this bus.
Yes.
And it crashes into another car and flips. Wow.
And here's an unbelievable thing. Where the flagpole, where the telephone pole was,
mm-hmm.
was where he and I had been sitting maybe half an hour earlier. But he got up to sit with some girl.
Of course.
And I went to the back of the bus because there were sailors who were singing Christmas songs. Now, that left that seat empty. No one was sitting in it.
Wow.
But we had been in it half an hour earlier. We'd have been crushed.
Right.
Would have been the end of us.
Right.
I got a broken ankle out of it.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't hurt.
Bo wasn't hurt.
No. In fact, he got out through the front and then crawled back across the top of the bus and found me, and he pulled me up through a busted window.
Wow. I've never heard this story.
Yeah, because he couldn't make his way through the bus. It was,
yeah,
because of the tree and everything. It was impossible to get by.
Yeah.
So he pulled me out from there. Finally, police came in large numbers and ambulances. And I was taken to a hospital. And
do you remember where vaguely? Were you much out of the L.A.
Somewhere
area?
Somewhere up.
Bakersfield-ish?
North. Probably up in the Visalia area somewhere.
Okay.
Up there.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, no.
Sure.
But there's...
But you were out of the L.A. area.
Out of the L.A. area.
Halfway up to the Bay Area.
Yeah, up the 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, the old 101, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
The 5 hadn't been built.
Right.
The old 101. So I wound up in a hospital, and Father Deer collected an insurance check on my behalf and promptly put it in his pocket. I didn't learn about it until years later.
Hmm.
C'est la vie. Anyway, it was not permanent. It was a broken ankle, and I came out of it okay with no limp, no serious injury. And then joined the girls in Cordonesis Village.
So you continued on your journey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A different bus.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. So where's Cordonesis Village?
It's in the city of Albany.
Okay.
And
in California.
In California, right. In the Bay Area, East Bay. It's near the racetrack, Golden Gate. No, not Golden Gate Fields. Well, maybe it is Golden Gate Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the racetrack, that's right on the water's edge.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was a Navy base.
Okay.
So, being the entrepreneur, I discovered I could go out and buy boxes of candy bars for like a nickel each.
Right.
And I would bring them back because they were not available on the civilian market, just to GIs.
Oh, you would buy them at the base?
I would buy a box of them at the base, bring them in and sell them to people for 10 cents each.
Hmm.
Following through on
mm-hmm.
my lessons from
mm-hmm.
Watkins of double the price.
Because you were already a young capitalist.
I was already a young capitalist, and I understood about capitalism and how it worked. And I took advantage of my knowledge later on.
So I got to ask you, you mentioned selling for Watkins, and You were the richest kid in your school. Did you have that money when you made the trip up? Did you sort of have your own?
I still had some, yeah.
Some, okay.
Because I spent a lot of, well, I bought the bicycle.
Right.
And I did spend money. I mean, why not?
Sure, hookers blow, the usual.
Well, there was more coming in next week.
Right. And you're 12. Right.
Well, I was just barely, I was 11 when I started,
because
it was before my birthday.
Right.
But the rest of the time I was 12 and then 13.
Okay, but so, but on the trip up to the Bay Area, you had some money with you, but you didn't have like this load of cash that you had made selling things. Okay.
Just some.
So you were selling candy to civilians.
Yeah, civilians, 10 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd gobble them up. I mean, really.
Literally, yes.
So I thought, they sell this easy, I'm going to raise the price.
Uh-huh.
So I'd go back out and get another couple of boxes for a nickel each.
Right.
Sell them for 15.
Mm-hmm. Did that work?
Oh, yes.
So you doubled your profit.
More than, well, I doubled the profit, right.
From your previous
sale. I tripled my investment.
Right, right.
And doubled the profit.
So you're living, living with all of your brothers?
No, we weren't all in the same apartment. We were in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
Bo and I and... No, I guess it was just Bo and I in one apartment.
The boys, that makes sense.
Yeah, and the girls in another apartment.
But all, I've lost track now. All five girls. Where was it? Was Mary, Colleen, Jean, and Patricia? Was Jean part of this too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Jean. Unless she had, well, she may not have been out of the whack yet.
Right.
So I think
there
she
was the,
had.
There was the Women's Army Corps.
Yes.
Right. Or Women's Auxiliary Corps, excuse me.
Yes. She had to go. I think she had to go back up to Washington for a while and finish her tour of duty.
Yeah.
And then she was discharged and then came back down.
Okay.
And joined them. And the details are a little vague, like when she went, when she got back.
Right. But so then the five McCord kids, ranging in age from 12 to when Jean joined you, she would have been, I guess, in her early 20s, so like 24. All living together, or all living adjacent to each other in this apartment complex in Albany.
Cordonesis Village.
Have you ever, do you know if it's still there? Was this like
I don't know.
Wartime housing?
I think probably by now it's been torn down and single family homes.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
But I don't know that for a fact. I've never gone back and checked.
Okay.
Didn't have any reason to. I mean, temporary housing 65 years later, I think they'd probably be torn down.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Now, one incident happened which was, in a way, life changing.
Okay.
See, my father was probably the most prejudiced man I ever met in my life.
You mean a bigot?
A bigot. He was against everybody who wasn't what he was. If you weren't Anglo, Catholic, he didn't, whatever it was, you were less than he was.
Got it.
And doctors were butchers and lawyers were thieves. Well, that one I won't disagree with too much. But let's see. French were frogs. Italians were, what were Italian? Mexicans were spicks. Germans.
Yeah, okay. We get the, a man of his time.
And blacks were subhumans.
Right, we won't even go there.
And he really, no, because he would really despise blacks, just hated them. I don't know where that came from, but it must have been what he grew up with because it was such a strong feeling. So one day, soon after I moved in, one of the girls gave me some money to go buy groceries.
One of your sisters?
One of the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And next to Cordonesis Village was what was called the Project.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely black.
Mm-hmm.
Cordonesis was all white. The Projects were entirely black.
Right.
Well, not knowing any better, I cut through the Projects, got through safely, bought the groceries at the grocery store, and was coming back. I just retraced my route. About five black kids, I'm going to say close to my age, but all a little bit older, 13, 14, 15, stopped me. And they started taunting me and giving me a hard time for being in their project.
Mm.
They knocked my groceries to the ground, and then they knocked me to the ground and were piling on, and blows were hitting me. And then all of a sudden, two of them who were pounding on me got lifted by the scruff of the neck and pretty much kicked in the butt and told to get out of here and go.
Mm-hmm.
It was a young black man, about 18, 19,
mm-hmm.
who asked me what I was doing there. And I told him I was just coming back from the grocery store. And he said, "You don't know better than to cut through the project?" I said, "No, I've only been here a few days."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Okay, don't do it again." And he escorted me not only to the edge, but down the edge to where all I had to do was go over a couple of blocks and I was at the girl's place.
Yeah.
But anyway, that one incident made me realize that the old man was wrong, that his hatred of blacks was totally misplaced. And up to then, I'm not saying that I accepted his hatreds because I wasn't a hating person,
mm-hmm.
but I turned against him. My thinking changed entirely. If he's so wrong on this, he's probably wrong on a lot of other things.
Well, let's talk about your dad, sure. a bit, because this is not the first time that I've heard he was a difficult person, but with the age range, I mean, with Gene 12 years older than you, and the life experience they had, you know, was different than the life experience you had. Let's talk about your dad. Let's go back to that question. The kind of person he was and how he lived his life. What you thought now and what you think, what you thought then and what you think now all these decades
later.
Well,
let's start with Jean.
Mm-hmm.
She hated him.
Right.
Hated him with a passion.
Right.
And I'm told the reason was that after I was born, she got pregnant again right away.
Your mother did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that the old man didn't take her to a good doctor. He took her to a cheapy doctor, and she died. Now, I don't know the details.
Sure, of course
from
not.
There, I was a baby.
Yeah.
But that's what the older girls have told me. That
so you think they blamed him?
Yes.
For your mother's death?
For the loss of our mother, right. And Jean in particular blamed him. And you know, I never raise a subject with Jean, but it's possible he might also have molested her.
Mm.
And that would tend to make a young woman a little bit angry.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the other girls, I'm kind of making some assumptions here, so I have to be careful.
Yeah, let's be careful, but we can always edit this later.
Okay. I'm kind of assuming that they knew about the incident, and they were also mad at him for taking their mother away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no love lost between certainly the older girls. Jan and Colleen were just young enough that I don't think they knew what was going on. I certainly didn't.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So the older girls were alienated from him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And they still, you can probably get him to talk to you about the reasons why.
Do you need some water?
No. But my point is that I stopped believing him entirely.
Now, this is interesting, because I want to go back to this. Because under other circumstances, no. If you had been a different person, if you had been jumped by a bunch of blacks, as they were called then, this could have reaffirmed his feelings. This could have, you know, this could have made you a prejudiced person too. Was it the fact that you were rescued by somebody, or was there, you know, was it, as you said, you just weren't capable of this kind of hatred? And
well, I was never a hater, never.
Yeah.
And, but when this young black man, I'm saying 18, 19, when he rescued me, I realized they're not all bad.
Right.
They're not all horrible people, the scum of the earth. And that's when I changed, right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. It was a realization. Now I have to go back because I forgot something important.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Eagle Rock.
Okay.
I was enrolled in a school in Eagle Rock, and we were there several years, so I was probably 10, 11 in that neighborhood.
Right.
And one of the priests, Father McElhaney, I remember that name.
You went to Catholic schools.
Yes.
Yes.
Through the eighth grade.
Right.
Father McElhaney took a particular interest in me. Now, I don't know why. He had his reasons, whatever they were. But I did express to him that what I wanted to be was a priest when I grew up.
And when I've heard this story before, this is very much under the, you're very much encouraged in this line of thinking by Edith.
Well, what did she tell you?
No. I mean, what you had told me before was that she seemed particularly pleased at the idea of her son growing up.
Sure, absolutely. Right. Have a son become a priest? Wow. You know, you can't get any better than that. That's even better than being a doctor.
In a Catholic family? Yes, it is. So, Father McElhaney.
McElhaney. He took this particular interest in me. And after school, we'd go for long walks and just talk, you know, basic things. And then one day I started asking him questions,
mm-hmm,
about religion, philosophical attitudes, why he believed what he believed. And his first answers were, they were all satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
He explained them, and okay, that makes sense, that makes sense, that makes sense. Then my questions started probing a little bit, like, well, if God is good, why is there evil? Things
right.
like that. Why do good people die young?
These are very profound questions, not just for an 11-year-old, but questions you've been asking for as far back as there's been religion.
So he, first of all, he said, well, you just have to have faith.
Right.
And again, for a little while, that worked. And then after a while, it didn't work. And I couldn't just accept all these things in a church liturgy on faith. So he saw that, so he recommended that I start reading some philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me to Kant, Schopenhauer, who else? And I really didn't understand them, but some of the points were just clear enough that I did understand what these great philosophers were talking about. So they would ask questions, they in the book.
Right.
And I would ask the same questions of the good father. And he tried with the faith bit, and I said, Father, I can't accept that. That's just too pat an answer for questions that can't be answered with, you have to have faith. So that's when I started turning away from the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't short, brief. I mean, it wasn't immediate. It was a slow, slow, slow turning away. And I went back to school with a different attitude. You know, they teach catechism, and I wouldn't question the teacher, but I'd sit there in the class and say, that doesn't make sense. You know, it just doesn't square with the reality that I know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it started. And it took several years. Then when I got into high school, in a public high school, it moved a lot faster. By the time I was out of high school, I was no longer a Catholic.
What did you call yourself?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. When I got to college, I studied comparative religions.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that they all were pretty much the same thing. It's a racket. You pay me, and I will intercede for you to save your soul. Just make sure you pay me.
Right.
And I realized then that, you know, it's a business. It's a business. They're selling an absolutely total intangible, i.e. a soul, and paradise, and I don't believe in either one of them. I don't believe in an afterlife. Not anymore.
Yeah.
I think when you're gone. Period. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pretty meadows up in the sky, and no perpetual golf courses, and none of this. In fact, sometimes when I get into discussion with friends, and we talk about, I ask, okay, so let's assume, just for the sake of the argument, that when you die, you're going to heaven. And they always like that.
Sure.
So now describe what you think heaven is.
Mm-hmm.
And it ranges all over the place, but basically it's a very pleasant place to be. And I say, all right, now what are you going to do on the first day? Well, one of them, I love the answer. He said, I'm going to gaze on the face of God.
Mm-hmm.
All day long. All day long. What are you going to do on the second day? He said, I never thought of that. The third day, the fourth day, the 20th, the 1,000th day. What are you going to do? I said, never thought of any of that before. It was just the first day that I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the others. That's, you know, it's the perpetual golf course. Okay, you're going to play golf on the first day. What are you going to do on the second day? Play more golf. Yeah. And the third day, play more golf.
And every game is a perfect game.
Of course.
Right.
So every hole is a hole in one.
Exactly.
So
right.
So I don't doubt if I converted anybody, but I shook them up. I still do it when I meet somebody new that I feel I can talk to about this particular topic. They never thought of a second day. Never. None of them. So,
well, this is a sidebar, but an appropriate sidebar, because you and I used to have these conversations too when I was probably about the same age. Now, we didn't go to a church, but, you know, almost everybody I knew growing up did. And, you know, I had, as you know, friends and cousins, and I had these same questions, and you were always wise enough to not provide me with the answers, but say, you know, these are good questions to ask, and hey, good luck finding the answers, because I never have either. And I think there is, if there is a genetic strain to this, I think I also inherited your unwillingness to believe things just for the sake of belief. And I would ask, you know, when I got to college, similar thing, I'd meet people from different backgrounds, meet a lot of religious people. And my favorite question to ask them was, well, who else is in heaven? I mean, how far back, you know, if you, you know, unless you believe in this strict biblical account that we're all descendants of Adam, and some of them do. So are you going to meet Adam and Eve in heaven? Are they still banging around up there? And if, you know, all however many billions of people there have been in history, you know, they're all, you know, is, you know, are they all going to be up there? You know, are you going to run into Caesar? you know, what about non-Christians? What about people who were born before Christianity? You know, you start
or babies who died without being baptized.
Right. You start pecking away at it, and the whole thing falls apart, because I think people really don't think about
that. Don't think about it.
Right.
They absolutely don't.
Yeah.
They give it no thought at all. It's what they've been taught by their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And their father's father taught them, and their father's father's father taught them. And you go back to the beginning, if you want to say with Catholicism, you go back 2,000 years, that's not what Jesus taught.
Right.
It is not what he taught. He taught apocalypse. We already discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
He had no reason to create a religion. Religion was created strictly by men to exploit the common people and get paid for selling them some snake oil.
Well, so let me take this moment to sure. thank you both for your genetic component and for encouraging me, encouraging all of us to think about these things and ask the questions and not look for easy answers. But let's get back to...
Well, let's cut for a minute.
Oh, certainly.